When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome to your midweek pod on the Tyne, which is very much stretching the definition of midweek. But this is what happens when you're Newcastle United and you have so many bloody games to play, because you're just so bloody great and there's so bloody much to talk about. I'm Taylor Payne. Newcastle, the holders, are still in the Carabao Cup. Now I'm joined by Chris Woff and George Colgan, who's in London. Hi, George. You all right?
I'm very much all right, yeah. As some people have heard, I was very, very happy to be in the pub watching the match, watching a Newcastle match. Don't get to do that very often. Lovely to see Jacob, lovely to see Ollie, and lovely to hang about with so many great, passionate Newcastle fans and, yeah, have a pint. What a lovely thing that is to do, Taylor.
It's fabulous, isn't it? We should do it more often.
I know.
Absolutely. Chris Woff, how are you? You were at St James' Park last night. You all right?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. Sleep deprived, but that's normal after a sort of nighttime match. And when Newcastle have won, then that makes things a lot easier. Yeah, and I've been writing about the fact that, well, are Newcastle United ever going to lose a game again in the Carabao Cup? I just can't see it. I just think it's just, this is forever now.
Yes, absolutely. They are. They're going great guns. Right then, let's start with some headlines, chaps. George, we'll start with you. Three home games, three competitions, zero problems.
Yes, I mean, certainly last night, certainly against Spurs, just felt like such a professional performance. But yeah, what a marker, what a great run of games. Three competitions, I mean, it's weird really, but the Premier League, the Champions League, the Carabao Cup, Newcastle win all three. There is proper genuine momentum behind them now into the quarterfinals of the Cup. Look in a good position in the Champions League, and things are a lot healthier in the Premier League. What a run of games.
Chris, Fulham away at the quarterfinal Kings.
Right, sorry, I missed it, because when you said Fulham away, I was thinking that it isn't away, it's at home. But I get where you're coming from then. Away, right, sorry, I thought you said away.
Do you want me to do that again?
Yes, please.
Chris, Fulham away at the quarterfinal Kings.
Yes, it's kind of draw, really, is that I think Newcastle could have got Cardiff were in there as well, but Newcastle will host Fulham, who they've just beaten, albeit narrowly. at St. James's Park just in the lead-up to Christmas. A massive opportunity, another home tie, third successive round they've been at home with, and get into hopefully another two-legged semi-final after reaching the quarter-final for the fourth successive season under Eddie Howe.
George, Magpies, Eagles and Falcons all soaring.
Yeah, the Falcons bit is a bit of a misnomer, bearing in mind the rugby team and now the Red Bulls. But Red Bulls, of course, also have wings.
They do.
See what I did there?
Very good.
And they can't win a game, but
yeah, whatever. But a really interesting thing that we're going to come on to talk to, which is that Newcastle's three big top flight sporting clubs are getting together. They're talking about how to make each other better. They're swapping ideas and procedures and all of that kind of stuff. It's really fascinating, really encouraging. Hear more of that later in the pod.
Lovely stuff. And finally, the Lasses have an interim coaching set up for Ipswich Town.
Yes, so obviously Becky Langley was dismissed earlier this month, and as of yet, despite meetings taking place this week inside Newcastle, which presumably means they're making progress, no replacement has yet been brought in. So Claire Ditchburn, who's the assistant of Becky Langley, or was the assistant of Becky Langley, is an interim charge, with Peter Ramage, the former defender and the current assistant loan player manager, is assisting her at the moment for the trip to Ipswich.
Lovely stuff. Right, Chris, George and Boy Wonder, Jacob, of course, discussed the cup win over Spurs in our match day pod for extra time subscribers. We can actually get a little flavour of that right now.
I just want to make a very, very general point, which is just that the pub is great, isn't it? I mean, the pub is just a great thing. The pub is a great thing. I'm not asking for your opinion, Jacob. I'm just saying the pub is a great thing. What a great thing to do. I'm really happy to be here. And it's great seeing so many Newcastle United fans wearing shirts. There's a Dan Byrne shirt just to my right here. People having a drink at half time, having a sly cigarette outside the pub. Lots and lots of shirts inside the pub. What a great place this is.
So you like the pub, George? Just to clarify, yeah, okay. You do like the pub. Yeah.
I do appear to quite like the pub. That's fair enough. I stand by every.
I thought you said you only had one pint.
I did only have one pint. I had
one pint of gin.
I had one pint of gin, and then I had 2 pints of Guinness Zero. It doesn't sound like it on that clip, but honestly, I did. But I was just—I think I was high on life. I was drunk on the atmosphere. It was really good, and ended up chatting to loads of people. Chatted to Jamie Eastlake, friend of the pod, who's got really exciting things going on. He's a theatre impresario. He's one of our own. He's got really exciting plans coming up with plays and stuff. Can't wait to share that with you. And met and chatted to lots of Newcastle fans. Why shouldn't you be enthused and excited about that? But anyway, there you go.
You could have gone any point in the last millennia and have got just picked someone out in a public house, and they'd have said, if they've had quite a few, and then have said something like, "Isn't the pub just a great place?"
I found it was, you know, I said to you, Chris, afterwards that I'd missed you last night, and I did. It sounds a bit sort of sentimental and strange, perhaps, because it was only one match. But I also loved being with people that I loved. I loved being with Ollie, loved being with Jacob, and just hanging out and watching football and sort of communing like that. I don't sort of get that opportunity. You know, we are fans. We are Newcastle fans. But most of our life around matches is professional for Chris and I. So anyway, yeah, it was just a big treat all around.
Brilliant stuff. A huge thanks as well to everybody who's subscribed so far and or to our ad-free shows through Support and Cast. To find out more about protecting the future of the pod and hopefully helping us grow, please go to podandthetine.supportandcast.fm for more details. And if you can't afford a subscription, you don't want to pay, that's absolutely fine. Please keep enjoying the free-to-air Pod and the Tyne. We love and appreciate you too, and we'll hopefully be able to bring you some great offers on mail-order mattresses very, very soon. Right, I'd like us to get started. Stuck into a couple of meaty talking points to emerge from the match, and I don't mean Chris Woff's gravy trousers. Firstly, why are Newcastle United so good in the Carabao Cup, Chris?
Yes, so I've written about this on The Athletic. It's gone up this morning, and by this morning, I mean Thursday. Newcastle's record in this competition under Eddie Howe
is astonishing.
Staggering, really. Yeah, across the previous 13 seasons pre-takeover, and it was pre-takeover because they got knocked out by the time they win the 2021-22 season. Newcastle had reached the last 8 three times. In each of the last 4 seasons, they've reached the quarterfinals of this competition.
The only team to do it as well, I believe?
No, I think Man City won it 4 times in a row. So
in the last 4 years, though, I mean...
Right, in the last 4 years, sorry, right, yeah. Sorry, in general. Yeah, but only once in 19 matches spread across 4 years have Newcastle lost in normal time. And that was the final defeat to Manchester United. Obviously, they had the penalty shootout defeat to Chelsea the following year in the quarterfinals, when really they were winning until the 92nd minute, and then they managed to lose it. So that was 681 days ago. So, and since then, Newcastle have not. They've had 17 victories, 15 in normal time, 2 via shootout, 32 goals scored, only 9 conceded, and 11 clean sheets. This is their competition, and they're really. You speak to people inside the club. I mean, they say it publicly, but also behind the scenes, they just talk about this is our competition. We don't want to let it go. And I thought it was fascinating that Aaron Ramsdale, in the Matchday programme, since our start of the piece, there's a quote from him where he said, "I was made aware by a number of people that it's our trophy, that yeah. we're the holders and we're going to try and win it again. We're not going to give up the trophy lightly." And yeah, it's just the record is remarkable under Eddie Howe.
I love this. I mean, the fact is that the sort of League Cup has been dismissed for a long time. It's like an afterthought for the biggest clubs. And of course, you know, I think that's changed a little bit in the sense that teams love winning it and clubs love winning it. And it's the first opportunity in a season for teams to kind of win something. But the fact that Newcastle have embraced it so much is just very special. And of course, to us, it is the most important competition in the world. It is the biggest trophy in the world. I am exaggerating slightly, but it's the trophy that we've just won after 70 years of not winning a domestic trophy. But I don't know, is there something about the timing of the competition?
Yeah.
That the way it works, it builds for a team who go on these big winning streaks in a season. That's always seemed to happen under Eddie Howe, in a way that sort of doesn't happen when the FA Cup comes around. It's like the FA Cup the timing of the FA Cup is almost a sort of distraction. Now, don't get me wrong, the FA Cup has always been the trophy that I wanted to see Newcastle win, really. But there's something peculiar and something magnificent about the way Newcastle have just been able to get things right so often with the League Cup, and it is like the timing of it somehow fits into their quality, somehow fits into their way of working.
Does it feel, Chris, the same as last season? Last season, Newcastle were really professional in all of those performances when they battered their way through the competition and ended up ultimately winning it. It feels kind of similar, doesn't it?
Well, before I answer that, I want to flip the question to you as a fan and say, does this run feel the same as like is in do you still feel now Newcastle have won this trophy and are defending champions, does it still feel the same for you? Does it still have that sort
of
absolutely, or has that changed for you?
The excitement's still there. I still want us to go all the way and win it. Like George said before, like Aaron Ramsdale said, it's our trophy to lose now, so definitely want to keep a hold of it. But I think it's we're still only two. We're only two games in?
Yeah, because they had a bye in the first round.
Right, there was a bye in the first round, so we're only two games in. So I think after the next game, if we beat Fulham in that quarterfinal, you kind of go, oh, okay, hang on. This is all happening again, isn't it? And it starts to come back round. But yeah, it definitely still feels the same. It still feels exciting.
I love that mentality. And it is what I want to sort of protect as well. It's that, okay, so this is our first domestic trophy for 70 years. So we're going to hang on to it by hook or by crook. And I love that attitude. It's not like, oh, okay, we've won the League Cup. Now we can sort of forget about it. We're going to move on to better things. It's like, no, we want, you know, that... You said that word, Taylor, at the top of this, saying holders Newcastle United.
Absolutely.
Come what may, Newcastle will be holders until March, won't they? But like, yeah, let's be holders next season as well. And it's, yeah, I don't know. I think it's like really powerful. And that is, as Chris says, that is obviously a message that they've used internally. Like finally, we've got our hands on a piece of silverware and they can prize our cold, dead fingers off it.
Absolutely.
And Newcastle are playing with that kind of attitude in it.
I think this is the type of team that will slack off, even though they've achieved the goal of winning the cup competition. We saw them last season. They carried on to the end of the season. We ended up in the Champions League. I think, again, this season, they're not going to look at that cup and go, well, we've won it now. What's the point? They're going to go, right, we want to win it again. It's got to be done.
In my piece, I sort of try to look into some of the reasons as to why Newcastle have been so successful in this competition under Eddie Howe. And I think there's a few reasons. First of all, I think that they've had some kind draws at certain points. And by that, I mean a lot of home matches. And the St. James's Park factor is huge. In each of the three of the four seasons, they've had three successive home ties leading up to the quarterfinal and through to the semi-final. So that's helped them. But then they've beaten some massive teams as well. And I think that they've learned and progressed through it. So if in that first year when they reached the final, had they had Arsenal over a two-legged semi-final at that stage, would they have been ready for that sort of a big game to win over two legs? Possibly not. But they learned after that final. They got better. They improved. And then 2 years later, the teams they beat along the way, they beat first... second and fourth in the Premier League, seventh and 11th, I think it was, the teams to get there and win that trophy. It's really, really impressive what they've done there. There's also the fact that although Eddie Howe made changes, he made eight changes last night. He made seven in the previous round, and yet that was still a strong side.
You would never say that was a weakened team either, would
no.
you? No. Never say that.
And what's crucial about when he does make those changes is that he also leaves in some of the senior leadership team. So Bruno Guimaraes was in the team in the previous round. Dan Byrne was in the team for this round. And it's just that it's that seniority that's there. Also the likes of Sandro Tonali. But having that senior leadership team, players who this means so much to, who embody everything about Newcastle, this competition, and what they've tried to do. And I think that that constant thread has really, really helped them. And that's some of the reasons why they have been so successful and continue to be in this tournament.
Chris made this point as well on the Matchday pod. But it was ultimately about the professionalism of Newcastle's performance and, you know, sort of by the end of it, how solid it was. Now, you can talk about the second half of the first half where, you know, Spurs came into it, Ramsey was needed, and, you know, there were a couple of kind of moments like that, which I think has been a theme this season when Newcastle have had a really good start and then sort of slacked off or backed off a little bit. But overall, that is a really, really professional performance. And there are shades to me of those Arsenal games last season where Newcastle just powered through a really, really big fixture with a minimum of fuss. The difference this time, of course, we know is that this is a team in transition. But with that context and with the context of so many changes, I just think that was such a solid, solid, undramatic performance.
Chris, does something have to give in one of these competitions eventually, or can Newcastle handle it? There's a lot of games to be played, isn't there?
Yeah, this is something that I was chatting to George actually before the game yesterday, and then we briefly chatted afterwards, not really on the podcast, but it was something that we were just talking about, is that I was always of the opinion before Newcastle won this competition that winning a trophy should come ahead of the Champions League. And I think I wasn't necessarily in the minority, but I don't think that was a majority view. I think a lot of people, in terms of what the Champions League can mean and how transformative it can be, that was the sort of, if it was going to be one or the other, thankfully Newcastle did both last season, if it was going to be one or the other, for me it would have been the trophy. This year, I look at it slightly differently, and it's where more my concern is, do Newcastle have enough to handle it all? We're going to come on to squad depth in a second, and potentially they do, but the 2 years Newcastle have reached the final and also qualified for the Champions League, they haven't had Champions League football. Now, they were one Kieran Trippier brain fart away from reaching into the semi-final when they were in the Champions League in the 2023-24 season, but do they have the depth of resources? And if not, I mean, if you look at the fixtures that are going to be coming up now, Newcastle are going to be going to Bayer Leverkusen in the Champions League, they're going to have Sunderland away in the derby, and then they're going to have this quarter-final. Now, that's a run of fixtures where, again, Howe's going to have to juggle resources. If they then get through, they're then going to have a two-legged semi-final in January when you've got two Champions League matches, including going to PSG. You've got Liverpool, you've got Aston Villa in a lot of matches. And you start to look at it and you just start to wonder, can they deal with that? And I hope so. And Eddie Howe will embrace that challenge. He won't want to be out of that. But that's the one thing I look at it and say, as positive as this competition's been for them, does it have to give at some stage, or does it take precedence over those other competitions?
I do think it's a kind of interesting talking point. I mean, if you look at the team changes, you know, and if that's all you base it on, then you say that the League Cup is further down in the list of priorities in the sense that he hasn't gone all out with his first, you know, strongest 11. But there's also something so beautiful and impressive about the attitude that that team last night took the pitch with, because it wasn't as if this was an afterthought. I mean, it's like we've seen this so, you know, don't want to keep harking back. But, you know, we've seen so many times in the past, pre-takeover, when a change team would come onto the pitch and, you know, they knew that this was not what the priority was. Yeah. They knew that they were going out. They knew that there was no way they were going to progress. And you would feel, just looking at the team sheet, that Newcastle had lost before the game had started. Now, I looked at that team last night and thought, wow, God, that is a strong team. And, you know, the intent there is to go and win it. I mean, all managers say that, of course, but there was like the attitude was to go and win it. And we're just in a different environment now. We're in a different environment where three different competitions mean there have to be changes. But the one thing you're looking for, the holy grail, is for the attitude to be the same from one to the next to the next. And I think that's what Newcastle have got spectacularly right over the last week or so, and long may it continue. And whilst, you know, it's worth remembering very, very briefly, Lewis Hall is still out, Livramento is still out, big players are missing. Johan Wisse, we know that, but they're somehow managing to juggle it and get through. It's just so impressive.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
The second big meaty talking point we want to get into, which is related to what George has just been discussing, is Newcastle's squad depth, now the best it has been in the Premier League era. Let's have a chat about some individual players. I want to start with you, Chris, though, bringing in some Discord thoughts.
Yeah, well, actually, partly this discussion point has been raised by some of the people on Discord, some of our subscribers who are on there talking about, they're debating among themselves almost about, is this the best squad Newcastle have compiled in the Premier League era? I mean, I think I'd go further as to say it's probably the deepest squad Newcastle have ever had in the history, because you didn't used to have squads of this size.
No, I would agree with that.
And you can argue the toss about whether the Entertainer's first team at certain points was maybe stronger than this first 11. I think that would be a fair debating point. But as in terms of options to bring on in every single position, the bench was just the players that they brought on, the five players who came on the field. I mean, Willa Sula may be aside relative to the sort of established elite of the other players. Bruno Guimaraes, Joe Linton, Anthony Gordon and Kieran Trippier. I mean, they're players who have graced the Newcastle 11 for the last few years and would be in the most strongest 11s over a long period of time. And Jamal Lascelles wasn't even on the bench for this game. And Tino Livramento and Lewis Hall weren't in the squad because they're out injured at the moment. Johan Wisse hasn't been seen yet. So I think that it's fascinating just how deep the squad is. And it's about also the fact that they are staying. I mentioned those injuries, but largely they haven't had too many injury issues. And so that means that the depth is there and that Howe can make 8 changes. And suddenly you look at it and think, 8 changes, but that's a very strong team still.
It certainly is. George, just how good is Sandro Tonali? I mean, come on. Is he one of the best? Is he one of the best you've seen in that position doing that job?
He has to be, Taylor. I want you to answer your own question, because I did a bit of this on the match day and I will talk about it again, but come on, you give me your opinion.
Just a specimen, isn't he? He's got everything going for him. He seems to read the game. He's a couple of moves ahead of everybody else. There was a point last night when the ball broke back towards our half when we were attacking and he just came out of nowhere and just took the ball. And I just thought, he just sees things. He just sees things happening before they've happened. And he never looks flustered. He always looks like he's got more time than anybody else on the pitch. I don't know. And there's something so beautifully normal about him. He's not flashy. He's not over the top. He's not, you know, he's not look at me. He's not pumping his fist like Bruno does. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love what Bruno does. But he's just so unspectacular that he is spectacular with it. I love it. I love watching him. I love him. I love the bloke, George. I love him.
Well, your appraisal there is very similar to what I said on the match day pod. And I was actually having this conversation in the pub. I must give a shout out to Lucas and Peter. Great to chat to them. And, you know, but that was one of the kind of points that we were debating around the table. Is he the best player in Newcastle's history? Is he the best midfielder in Newcastle's history? And in some ways it seems, you know, ridiculous to be even having that conversation, bearing in mind, in relative terms, how few games he's played and that he started with that long ban, of course. But I do think we're witnessing something incredible with him. And I just agree. I agree with absolutely everything you've said. It's quite difficult to come up with new or different adjectives to describe him. But, you know, like the encouraging thing, just to widen that point slightly, is that he didn't play against Benfica or Fulham.
Yeah.
And then Bruno didn't start last night. Bruno didn't start against Spurs in the League Cup. Now, we know how absolutely pivotal Bruno is to the team in the Premier League, and he just doesn't miss games. You know, touch wood, that remains the case. So that's a kind of slightly wider point. No, I agree. You can just get lost watching
Tonali. Makes it look so easy, doesn't he, George?
You can just follow him. You can just follow him. It doesn't even matter whether he has the ball. He's got everything.
I get exhausted just watching him, though. The amount of ground he covers. But he sort of does it in a.
I mean, he doesn't glide in the same way that Alexander. glides, but he's
who?
Yeah, but he's kind of, he manages to be everywhere all at once. But he's constantly looking. He doesn't waste anything. He doesn't, you know, he's energetic, but he doesn't waste energy. He runs when he needs to run. He finds space. He's always in space. Yeah. He always wants the ball. He's can be at the top end of the pitch. He can be at the back end of the pitch. As you say, he does it without sort of histrionics. It's just like, this is what he was born to do. He is so beautiful to watch.
There's a little thing he does where if he's under any bit of pressure, his stride changes ever so slightly, and he just opens his legs up, and he's able to burst away from anyone. You know, you wouldn't call him a quick player, would you? But he's got that explosive power, which makes it impossible for other players to get close to him.
But that's it. And he also, I mean, the fashionable term is scanning, but he's always looking around. So he's looking around when he's got the ball, he's looking around when he hasn't got the ball, which means that he's got this built-in advantage. So he knows where the ball is going to go before it gets to him. And it's like, you see that all the time with the best players. Like when you think about Arsenal at their very, very best under Arsene Wenger, with the way they can move the ball so quickly, and they had that sort of thing where they weren't supposed to keep hold of the ball for longer than a second or whatever it was, and the ball would just move. And sort of in retrospect, you had this pattern in your head, and it was always, the ball was always going to go in those directions because they're always thinking a step ahead. Tonali is like that. He doesn't have to be the quickest player in the world in terms of physicality, because his brain is quicker than everybody else. So he knows where the ball's going before it gets to him. It's beautiful to watch.
Chris, I want to mention Fabian Schär as well. Obviously, he hasn't been playing as much recently, but came into the team last night, scored a goal, played pretty well. It's nice to see him back, wearing a long-sleeve shirt, looking stunningly gorgeous as ever.
Well, quite. I mean, that just comes with the territory, doesn't it? But he hadn't started a match since he suffered a concussion and went off against Barcelona in the Champions League. Obviously, Malik Chow and Sven Botman have performed so well at centre-half that he found his minutes restricted. But he came on at the weekend against Fulham, did well. And then, I thought he was very, very good all round against Spurs, and to get the goal, for its 22nd goal he scored for Newcastle now, which is, it is ridiculous for centre-back. And shout out to Jamie Smith on Discord, a friend of the pod. He came up with a stat, he scored in 8 consecutive seasons for Newcastle now, Fabian Schär, and he'd wondered if beyond Alan Shearer, was there anyone else in the modern era who had done. I think that Kieran Dyer did as well. I think he scored in 8 successive seasons. But for a centre-back to do that, A, it shows his longevity, but B, shows the record he has in terms of scoring goals. And that Newcastle have great depth there. As I mentioned earlier, no Jamal Lascelles even on the bench. Emil Kraft can play there if necessary. Dan Byrne, who we're going to talk about in a minute, playing at left-back, but obviously centre-back as well. Sven Botman on the bench due to having his head stapled after the weekend. So, fascinating to see who is the centre-back partnership this weekend.
Absolutely. Aaron Ramsdale, George, had to bide his time. Hasn't had many games so far, but he played very well last night. Looked comfortable on the ball, assured when he was taking crosses. A couple of great saves as well.
Yeah, there was that brilliant save with his, when he dived to his left, when Pape Sarr took a shot, just a really strong hand, really strong wrist to punch it. And it was the lovely thing then was to see all the centre halves, all the defenders get together with him, pat him on the head, congratulate him. You know, when a keeper comes into a team like this, what you don't want to see is uncertainty. You don't want to see that sort of ripple of nervousness go through the team. There just was none of that. It just felt very, very seamless. It looked like he'd been there forever. He was really good coming out to claim the ball. Just a very strong performance. He looked happy, looked content. Again, that's what you want. It was sort of those changes that went into the team led to no change of attitude or approach. And Yeah, so really pleased to see him enjoying himself and have a good game like that.
You mentioned him coming out. I mean, at one stage, he actually chested the ball into the middle of the pitch as well and then kicked the ball up. It's again that sweeper-keeping thing that Nick Pope did. But at that stage, I was like, where is he actually going here? But it was actually, as much as I had my heart in my mouth at that stage for him, it was actually calmness because he knew what he was going to do and it was exactly the right decision.
Yeah, his defence looks like they trust him as well. I'm quite lovely to see people playing the ball back and just being sort of steady and ready to go. Dan Byrne, Chris, let's talk about Dan.
Yeah, I thought he was absolutely excellent against Spurs, almost described as by many on social media, sort of like an underlapping sort of fullback wing back almost. He was getting forward a heck of a lot and trying to...
Loves getting in the box, that lad, doesn't he? Loves
he
it.
He does, but he whipped in a couple of really good crosses. I thought he linked up really well. He was trying to link up with Harvey Barnes and it didn't always necessarily work out, but the two of them are trying to build that relationship sort of on the hoof as well. They haven't played together loads recently down that flank. I was concerned when he was moved back to left back a few weeks ago. Then there have been moments, even against Fulham, though, moments where, you know, Adama Traore gets in behind him and doesn't for speed, but he's just been magnificent and is, again, someone who just plays so often. He's played every single minute of the season, barring the Bradford City match in the previous round. He started every single Premier League game and finished them all. Same in the Champions League, and they did against Spurs. And he's done it first at centre-back and now at left-back. Yeah. And yeah, he just keeps on confounding those of us who doubt him, and I doubted him moving to left-back. He just continues to confound.
8 clean sheets for Newcastle United this season in all competitions. Dan Byrne has played in all of those games, started all of those games. That's a stat I've used before and keep updating, and I will keep doing it.
Brilliant. Joe Willock, George, nice to see him back in the team, a bit more like his old self. A nice assist for Nick Waltemader as well.
He sent over that cross. I mean, we have to, you know, again point out that the goalkeeping was really pretty awful.
It was fictional goalkeeping.
It was nominal. It was notional goalkeeping, Taylor.
Almost as bad as a refereeing, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, and it was more like the Joe Willock that we want to see and we know is in there somewhere. He, sort of all the players in Newcastle's first team squad, has been the one that you just feel isn't quite there, isn't quite hitting the heights. We know he's had this awful run of injuries. You long for a bit of kind of good luck. We know that he needs sort of regular football to kind of to get up to speed and to show his qualities. You want him to sort of be fulfilled and happy and look happy. And, you know, that contribution is really important. He's got a great skill set. Hopefully for him, that's a bit of a turning point. You know, we remember we talked about on the pod not too long ago about Eddie Howe saying players have got the opportunity to impress him in training every single day and they've got to take that. And the implication was that that wasn't quite happening. It's difficult to put ourselves into his shoes, but we know he's had a really tough time and we know that Newcastle have now got a wealth of talent in midfield. But it's on him, you know, it's on him to push and push. Someone like Dan has shown it's possible to get in the team and stay in the team when other players have come in, perhaps to succeed him, perhaps to replace him, and he keeps on doing it. So the opportunity is there for Joe Willock. Hopefully that's a bit of a turning point for him.
Yes, and Joe Linton coming off the bench and getting himself into a scrap was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it? Nobody saw that coming. In fact, I enjoyed it so much, it made me go back to an old tweet from Footalize on the 16th of March 2025, who said, "I'm not sure Joe Linton even enjoys football. I think he just takes immense satisfaction in spoiling it for everybody else." And that's exactly what he did when he came on, Chris.
He did, yeah, I mean, it was the fact that Xavi Simmons tried to square up to him as well. I think he quickly would have regretted that. The only thing I've come back to on the sort of date of that tweet, as much as I agree with all of it, was that is, I believe, Carabao Cup final day, and Joe Linton was absolutely immense that day. He was superb, both as a footballer and in terms of as a shithouser. So that's the only way I would come back on that, because he was man.
Yeah, and great. He's had a dodgy couple of matches, and so great to see him come on with that fire and that energy, and, you know, wanting to contribute. And, you know,
I'm not sure Mohamed Kudus would agree with you there, George. But,
anyway, it's what you need.
It is absolutely what you need. Right then, chaps, let's have a little break and we'll be back in a second with something completely different.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Go Inter!
And now for something a little bit different, chaps. A few days ago, Chris and George were invited to St James's Park to witness what was called a Newcastle Coaches Network. This sounds a bit dry, but was actually something quite special and really encouraging. George, can you pick up the story for me?
Yeah, something that Chris and I have written about in the Athletic, and yeah, just something that filled me with positivity and excitement. And so what this was, it was a get-together in the Joe Harvey Suite at St James's Park, not just of Newcastle United coaches, but also of representatives from the Newcastle Eagles, the most successful British basketball team in history, and the Newcastle Red Bulls, previously the Falcons, another top flight club in Newcastle, who of course have just been taken over and are going through very similar things that to Newcastle United of a few years ago. Now, this is something that they've been doing since last year, and it's, you know, this particular session was about player development, the different experiences the clubs have at bringing their own players through, how that works, what their methodology is. But they've done previous sessions before when it's been practical. They've done coaching sessions together, talking about, movement in their respective sports. And what I love about this is that it's this idea of Newcastle United in particular, because obviously they're my team, being outward facing and being willing not only to share their experience with these other teams in the city, but to learn from them. And to swap ideas, to have a relationship, to build relationships. And the idea is, yes, the betterment of their own individual clubs, but it's also about the betterment of sport in Newcastle. And to be fair to Newcastle United, this is something they've been doing post-takeover. They're really keen to build relationships with other institutions in the city. You know, I mentioned in the piece that both Darren Eales and David Hopkinson have reached out to Sir Brendan Foster, because if you want to talk about sporting excellence in Newcastle upon Tyne, the football club is only a really recent addition to that conversation. So go and talk to the fella who set up the Great North Run, the biggest half marathon in the world. So it's just really exciting to me. And this is the club that you want Newcastle United to be again. And anyway, Chris and I had a nice chat with Neil Winskill, who is the head of technical development at Newcastle United, to ask him about this project and why they're doing it.
I think if you look at what we're trying to achieve, certainly from our club's point of view, we want to produce the best players possible for Eddie Howe to use in the first team. And in order to do that, we're going to need the best staff. Part of this is about developing our coaches, broadening their skill set, opening their eyes to different ways of doing things. From the other experts in the area, the three clubs, we're all trying to do the same thing. We're all trying to develop talented young sports people. We just thought there was an opportunity here to work with the other two clubs to share that expertise and knowledge and learn. We've got a wealth of experience in the area. I mean, Ian, who works at the Eagles, has worked with England basketball. He's worked at Olympics and all sorts. We would be mad not to tap into that and see if there's anything that we can bring back to football to try and develop our players and staff. And that's what this is. It's a chance to do that in a more organised setting, albeit a mixture of formal and informal.
I love this because it feels kind of very outward facing, and it feels like a club, Newcastle United, being good citizens.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I don't think that opportunity's always been there in the past. Just, you know, the free takeover might have been a willingness for people in the club to do it, but just sort of, it's never kind of quite happened. And I love the idea of the club wanting to soak up stuff. I mean, so offering your expertise, but also pulling stuff in and just creating relationships for the sake of it and seeing where it might take you.
We have a coaching qualification structure in football that is mandatory in terms of working in a Premier League academy.
Yeah.
So our coaches are constantly out there on courses, on refresher events, trying to learn. Whilst that's great and essential, we also have to think outside the box a little bit as well. There's some unbelievable people in the area that we need to tap into. So, for example, we're going to be speaking to the store manager at Fenix. How do they manage the departments? How do they communicate across a massive organisation with a huge workforce like they do? We've got the head trainer of air traffic control from Heathrow coming up to talk about how you deal with events of, you know, crisis or when things are not going quite right and you have to make decisions quickly and communicate that across a team. There's so much stuff that you can learn. You just have to put yourself out there. And what we tend to find is if you ask people, they're more than willing to share. You've just got to be prepared to ask, and maybe that's something we haven't done in the past.
And I mean, yeah, obviously a lot of it's been about video analysis. Now you've introduced that into some of the reviews, and it seems that the other clubs are very interested in that. Have you got any practical examples of your information being used by Red Bulls or Eagles or vice versa that you've sort of absorbed from the last few sessions that you've had?
Just through informal conversations, I think you'll find, you know, Ian and the Red Bulls team have been at the academy for a chat to try and organise this today, and they'll use, you know, when you said that, we've used that, we've took that, and that little example you give there, we like that, and we've brought that back. So, and we share the same, we learn the other way as well. The fact that the turnout's as big as what it is suggests that people are finding it useful.
It's that thing of thinking differently, isn't it? It's like starting off a conversation that can spark something in your own head, and that idea of transferable skills.
Absolutely, and also sometimes it just reaffirms things you already do.
Yeah.
When you hear the Eagles say, we use this approach with our players to try and develop this aspect of their game. Oh, we do that as well, that's good. So we're on the right lines here. So sometimes it's actually quite reassuring that what you're doing, if you get stuck in the bubble of your own little environment, you need to stress test that against somebody else or another organisation. So yeah, that's been a real positive.
Do you go out and watch these teams play? Are you a fan of rugby? Are you a fan of basketball? Do you go?
The staff are. They've got their own little interest in certain other sports. The last time we did this event was at the Eagles, and it was practical. So it was a basketball session, and Ian took the session, and our staff and myself all joined in it as well. And one of the things that came out of it is, what does your footwork look like when you're defending around the box or around the basket? And we had an hour conversation about the best way to move sideways. And it's something as small as that. Basketball do it like this, we do it like that. Actually, is the basketball way better than the way we do it? And a lot of the times you start to question the things that you've been taught all your life as a coach. Is it true or not? Or has it been a bit of a myth? And there's another way of doing it that maybe another sport could have taught us 10 years ago and saved us a lot of time and wasted time potentially. So that's been the beauty of this, the practical stuff as well.
Rather than just other sports, I suppose, in terms of, and this is sort of naivety on my part and ignorance, but resource-wise, presumably Newcastle United has greater resource for academies than in the basketball and the rugby union. So can you actually learn things as well, though, in terms of how do they make use of the fact that maybe they don't have as wide a resource as us? How do they practically work out how to solve these problems with fewer people? And even though they've got fewer people, in some ways you can take things positive from that as a bigger organisation.
For sure. I think Red Bull are going to go through a similar process in the next year or two that we've gone through at the academy. All of a sudden now we've got a lot more investment, we've got a lot more staff and resource, the departments are grown. If you go back, you know, 3-4 years, we had no psychologists in the academy, and now we've got a team of 3 of them. And whilst that is an amazing thing, it also brings its own challenges. How do you incorporate those within the work that we're doing? And how do we get that department, the sports science department, the football coaches department, to work together to do the things that Mark's just been talking about? I dare say with lesser resource, you have to be more efficient. You have to think differently. And there's beauty in that as well that we can use. We're actually blessed the other way now.
Yeah.
But it does bring its own challenges as well. So,
In terms of kind of beauty, there is something kind of quite beautiful about three great sporting institutions working together for the benefit of Newcastle as a sporting city, isn't there? I mean, it's like, it makes kind of perfect sense, but instead of just living in your own little sort of bubbles, actually, like, this is for the good of Newcastle as a as a whole.
We talk a lot about what the city is, and the city is a working-class city who are passionate about their sport, have a great community spirit, and live for football, basketball, rugby, whatever it might be. And it's the highlight of most people's weeks. You know, they work hard all week and save their money all week to go and watch their team play. That sense of community is what this is trying to be. This is about bringing three organisations together for the greater good of sport in our area. We want the Eagles and the Red Bulls to be as successful as what our football team is currently being. I think people outside of the club, they probably don't know about these type of things that go on. It's nice to be able to share that with people and share the sense of community and the sense of learning and passion that we all have that we want to use collaboratively across the three organisations and wider. We invest a lot of time and effort in the staff because we want the staff to be as good as they can be for the benefit of the players. I mean, we've got Gary here who's worked at the club for 25 years. Jamie, who's worked at the club for numerous years, in my opinion, are the best two coaches at under 8s, 9s and 10s in the country. But nobody would know about that. And I'm keen to champion them and the great work and loyalty and service that they've shown. But they're still wanting to learn. They're still sat here this morning after all that time. And the club's getting bigger. The expectations are higher. Rightly so. We have to make sure that our coaches are keeping up with that demand. And that's what this is. We're keen for people to know that we're not resting on what we've got. We want to be the best academy, not just in the northeast, not just in the country, but in Europe and the world. It's going to take time, but we're in a great starting place with the staff that we've got and the hunger that they've got. We just have to keep providing opportunities for them to get better.
Just one final question. When there's a clip of Louis Miley and how he's been training, doing those moves, and then to mention he does this in the Premier League for Newcastle, the Champions League for Newcastle, how does that make you and the other coaches feel to know that some of those specific movements are things that have been trained through them for the years, and then you see that on the top level?
Well, it's enormous satisfaction. One of my main jobs is to write the methodology from under sevens right the way up to under 21s and to try and align that with what the manager's doing with the first team. Somebody like Louis has been in the building from 7, 8, 9, right the way through the system. So to see him last night mixing it in that company, showcasing some of the things that hopefully have been taught to him throughout his journey at the club, just makes it all worthwhile. That's what it's about. But there's not one coach that could take any credit for that, because he's worked with Jamie, he'll have worked with Gary, he'll have worked with me. And numerous other staff in other departments as well. And ultimately, that's what it's about. We're not daft. That is a very small percentage of what is success. So to have another player who is playing in a League One or a League Two team, we also take pride in that. But we also take pride in the lad who got released at 18 and is now flying aeroplanes for a living. We've played a part in his journey. We'll never ever take credit for it. Ultimately, the players played the most part, and Louis takes all the credit. But I think we've probably given our little 5%. Yeah,
I found it fascinating because, as we said, as Taylor introduced it, you immediately, when we first got invited along, you think, "Oh, this sounds like it could be fairly dry." But then, when you hear discussions and they're talking about spending an hour on a basketball court working out what the best way to move sideways is, or when you see clips of Louis Miley. As a younger teenager, taking no touch turns and video clips of that, and how that is now has been translated into the first team setup, and he's doing that in the Premier League, he's doing that in the Champions League, and this is the sort of focus and the sort of detail that is involved in Newcastle United's academy, and they're further ahead in terms of what they're trying to do than someone like Red Bulls, who are going to try and really introduce a lot of this new technology. And what are the actual pitfalls? There are pros and cons of it, and what can these sports learn from one another? What can they learn from someone like the Eagles, who have far fewer resources? And then all of them trying to communicate for the betterment of the city and the elite sporting status of it. And I think that's just great, that sort of community spirit, and that's exactly how it should be, in my opinion.
And there was that kind of fascinating chat as well towards the end about sort of what a Newcastle team should look like. James Ponton from the Red Bulls was talking about how he'd coached the first team a couple of years ago, and he'd taken reels of inspiration from Newcastle United pressing, and he'd use that in sort of their match prep. But the Red Bulls also have this philosophy of fast and fierce in everything they do, which of course, you know, that relates back to Eddie Howe's Newcastle and this identity. And they were just bouncing all these things around. I just find it so encouraging, so heartening, so pleasing that Newcastle United are a club that outward facing again, that want to learn, but also want to share their own knowledge and just bounce things off each other. You don't know where these relationships will lead to, but this particular meeting, and you know, there'll be plenty more of these meetings moving forward. It's part of the schedule now, but it kind of ended with a plea for coaches of one team to pick up the phone, to go and have a coffee with coaches from another team and just see what they can learn from each other. I love that so much. I love it.
Are you scouring the web for the best Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals? Stop it. Get Rakuten. Rakuten is a shopping sidekick that gets you cash back on your gifts for everyone on your list. Right now, you can get up to 15% cash back at the stores you love. You can even stack cash back on top of the biggest sales of the year. That's savings on savings. It's more time shopping and less time searching. With Rakuten, you're always saving at your favorite stores on the things you're already buying. Cash back is automatically added to your account as you shop, and you get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. It's truly a no-brainer. Now's the time to join. Up to 15% cash back ends on December 2nd. Plus, new members will receive a welcome bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Come on, you Mackies.
Right then, chaps, let's move on to West Ham. Newcastle United, Chris, still not won away in the Premier League. That needs to change.
Yes, Newcastle's winless run stretches back to April when they won at Leicester City. It's now 7 away matches in the Premier League. During that time, they've drawn 4, lost 3. The last time they won a run this long, which stretched to 9 games, was at the start of Eddie Howe's tenure, when it had come from the start of the season, pre him under Howe and Bruce and Graham Jones, and then through to now. And yeah, they got 3 goalless draws in the first 3 away games, so defensively were there, but couldn't score. And then at Brighton, obviously, were really let it after a poor first half, got back in the game, but then still conceded and lost. And they do need to address this. Eddie Howe has said that they need to address this, and they can't just rely on their home form. If they want to certainly get back into the Champions League for next season, then the away form has to pick up, and it certainly has to pick up places like West Ham.
Yeah, West Ham have struggled, George, haven't they? It feels like the right game to do it, but we've obviously never gone into a West Ham game overconfident and then fallen flat on our faces, have we?
You make a good point. And the counterpoint to Newcastle's struggle, if that's the right word, away from home, is the fact that West Ham have been dreadful at their own stadium, which, let's not forget, is the worst place to watch football in the entire world. But they've played 4, lost 4 at home. They're in real trouble. They've won 1 game in all competitions this season. That was at Nottingham Forest. And they've changed managers already, but don't seem to be any closer to to sort of unlocking what's going on. I mean, so there's a great opportunity for Newcastle to go down there and do what they have done, to be fair, away from home, which is keep things tight by and large. And if they do that, then you would think that they may get some joy because things are, you know, mutinous at West Ham. They're really struggling at a team. So, you know, Newcastle will be going with the approach of seeking a win and, you know, being confident in getting one.
It's another test of the team's mentality as well, Chris, isn't it, this game?
It is, because Newcastle have flitted between three separate competitions across three home matches. But to do that at St James's Park is one thing. And they've won all three of them. They've passed those tests. And Howard's spoken about the highs of sort of a Champions League night to then return in the Premier League and find a way to beat Fulham. But then to go to West Ham, a team where Newcastle are expected to win, there is expectation on them to go there and get a victory because of West Ham's poor form, but also because of Newcastle and who they are and what they should be striving to achieve. But to match those levels, to make sure that there is no complacency setting in, to make sure that all of them do what they would usually do if this was hosting Barcelona in the Champions League, that this is exactly the same mentality, you have the same approach. And usually Newcastle have stepped up on most occasions under Eddie Howe to do that. But this is on the back of all those other fixtures and given their poor away form in the Premier League and the fact that even at home against Fulham in the Premier League, they still haven't quite hit the heights as they have in other competitions, to make sure they go there and get a positive result. This is another big marker that they need to set.
Newcastle's record there, George, is pretty good though, isn't it?
It is. It's been a happy hunting ground for them. I mean, the one difference, of course, for them is that Callum Wilson is no longer playing for Newcastle, because he always scored against West Ham.
He did.
Now, of course, he's playing for West Ham, albeit he's not starting matches. I think he's only started one game for West Ham this season. He scored in that game against Nottingham Forest that I mentioned earlier, but that's his only goal. I'm sure he'll get a great reception from Newcastle fans. Be great to see him if he comes on the pitch. But yeah, hopefully he doesn't have the same effect, but the other way around.
But you mentioned that record at West Ham, just to say it's so Newcastle have only lost one of their last eight away games at the London Stadium. They've won five and drawn two and are unbeaten in the last six. So it is somewhere where historically they have done well, despite it not being a football stadium.
Absolutely. Another selection dilemma though, Chris, potentially for Eddie Howe. But as they say, it's a nice problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's made eight changes from the previous weekend, and if he was to go, he likes the idea of continuing largely with the settled side.
Yeah.
But you would expect there's going to be at least half a dozen changes going at this weekend to be something more like the sort of Fulham team. You'd certainly think someone like Bruno Guimaraes comes back into the side. Defensively, what the combination is there, fascinating to see. Voldemarde, you would assume, would continue. He's now started, I think it's six consecutive games in all competitions for Newcastle, not including two games he started for Germany. So he's starting to get that fitness into his legs. But the wingers will probably change. What happens in terms of the goalkeeper, you would have thought Nick Pope comes straight back in. But does Jacob Ramsey deserve to stay in the side? Is Joe Willock even put himself in the equation? I think probably not. I think you'd likely see probably Tonali, Joe Linton and Bruno Guimaraes as the starting midfield three. But it really... The added benefit of nights like last night is that all of these players are putting their hands up to be in that side as well. And it's not just that they're coming and go, yeah, well, there's clearly a hierarchy where there's a settled first team. These players are trying to challenge that, and Howe has some very positive selection dilemmas, and that's exactly what he wants and needs.
Any news on Lewis Hall?
In his pre-match press conference, Eddie Howe said that Lewis Hall was the closest of Newcastle's injured players to returning, but the Spurs game would come too soon. So, you know, the implication is that he'll be there or thereabouts for West Ham. On Johan Wisse, this game was long seen as one that he could return for. What Howe said was slightly vaguer. And of course, we have to remember Eddie Howe's great skill at dissembling when it comes to injured players. He said he's still on track, but he needs some kind of mini pre-season, which you know, doesn't actually tell you whether he's had that mini pre-season or is having it. But yeah, it sounds like Lewis Hall is the closest to coming back at this point.
Just on Wisse, he was in the post-match photo after the victory over Spurs. He got himself into that. Ross Wilson's been the last few as well, which makes a significant change from previous era as well, I suppose. But yeah, for Wisse, I'm fascinated to see what Howe does over the next week, because I'm sure there's part of him that would like him to be on the bench, certainly away at Brentford the following weekend, going to his previous club. But then will Newcastle just be a little bit careful with him, particularly given what he's been through, that there's a two-week international break? Do they actually need to rush him back over the course of the next week, given what Willa Sula is offering at the moment? Will Newcastle just hold him back for the international break? I think that that's wait and see, and probably depends on the fitness of the others and how Wissa reacts. But I think that caution first, probably, given there's that two-week international break.
And Bruno Guimaraes has been nominated for Premier League Player of the Month for October as well, George. I think he would deserve it.
Yeah, all action captain. Newcastle have been over-reliant on him in the past, but he just sets the tempo. I mean, it's like when we're waxing lyrical about Tonali, we also just have to remember the captain's importance. Yeah. You know, every game he goes out with the same kind of attitude. And it's I don't know, it's almost dismissive to say that he's the tempo setter, but like, he loves playing for Newcastle.
He does.
He's in a great run of form at the minute. His enthusiasm, his positivity sort of just ripples through the whole team, and he absolutely deserves that.
I wrote about Bruno Guimaraes after the Fulham match and the fact that he scored 5 goals in his last 10 Premier League appearances at St James's Park for Newcastle. He got 2 of their 5 goals in October. Both of them were very important. The first one, to seal it against Forest, sorry, and also the goal that won it against Fulham in the last minute. He keeps going. He's finding himself more in these sort of attacking positions. He's changing his role slightly in terms of what he needs to bring the team, partly because he's moved to number 8 over the course of last year, but also partly because of the post-Alexander Isak way the team's evolving and changing alongside Nick Valdemara. He's been trying to get in the box more. That's what coaches want from him. And yeah, he just keeps on producing, keeps on offering, keeps on going. And even when I thought that he had very difficult first half in a couple of the last couple of games, including against Fulham, he then produces late on. He finds those big moments and he keeps going, and he doesn't ever hide. He always wants responsibility.
All right, Chris, just before we finish off, I want to check a stat with you that I heard today, and I'm not sure if it's true or not, but Nick Valdemara has scored 6 goals from 6 shots on target.
It is correct.
Can you confirm or deny?
It is correct.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
I mean, he's hit the post and the bar as well. He should have more, to be honest, but amazing stat.
It's amazing. George and I talked about this on the Extra Time podcast. The concern you have is how sustainable is that? At some stage, he needs to get more chances, because again, he scored with his only shot against Spurs. He only had 3 touches in the opposition box. There were some lovely touches and flicks and lay-ons. He laid on a wonderful chance for Harvey Barnes by letting the ball sort of roll through his legs and flicking it. And so there's so much to like about his game, and the fact that he is such an efficient finisher is great, but at some stage you would have thought he would regress towards the mean there. But yeah, for now, that's a ridiculous stat.
Shoot more, shoot more, shoot more. Score more goals, score more goals, score more goals.
Get the ball more.
It sounds like a daft thing to say, but it's like, if that conversion rate obviously can't last, it won't last. But if he has that sort of accuracy, if he has that ability to do that, then do it more.
Absolutely. Right then, that's it, chaps. Thanks again to everyone who's subscribed to Pod on the Tyne on support and cast. We're genuinely, genuinely blown away by the support and all of your lovely emails as well. Extra Tyne subscribers get an extra show every week. This week was the match day pod for that League Cup victory over Spurs, but there is an ad-free option as well if you just want to hear our free weekly show uninterrupted. Next up on Pod on the Tyne, free-to-air match day show when we face West Ham on Sunday. Get in touch via email, podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter X and Blue Sky at Pod on the Tyne. Thank you very much for your time, chaps. It's been a lovely little chat. Thanks, George.
I'm about 10% Cockney now, I reckon. I've been here for three or four days. I wonder if I'll go the full.
Is it your knees? Because normally Cockneys, it's the knees, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just desperate to get them up. I'm just desperate to get them up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, and I'm staying here for West Ham, so looking forward to that.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much for your time, Chris.
You're very welcome. Yeah, I'm just so pleased that I now that someone has explained to me how wonderful the pub is, and just moving
just
forward.
Do like, I might check the pub.
Let's all go to the pub. Often, yeah, know? Yeah. I don't think you need to check it out any more often. Sounded a bit harsh.
Casting aspersions there. I resemble that remark.
Casting nasturtiums. I'm just going to go to the pub more often. I think that's my big takeaway from the last 24 hours.
Let's all go to the pub. Right, thank you very much, ladies and gents, for listening. It's been fun. We shall speak to you very soon. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, goodbye.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.